Aloha, everybody. I'm Rima.
I'm Jason.
And I'm Paik.
And this is Strange Indeed, a podcast dedicated to the show Lock and Key.
Today we'll be covering the seventh and penultimate episode of season three titled Curtain. Because it's curtains for the locks.
Yes, and
curtains. Right?
Close the curtain.
Next episode is just all black.
It's just over. Yeah. Yeah. That's the how void. The show ended.
That'd be bold.
Mm-hmm.
So this was an interesting episode because I think you mentioned it last week, Jason, that this was co-written with Carlton Cuse and also the creator, writer of the comics, Joe Hill himself, co-wrote this episode. What did y'all think of this week's penultimate
episode? I thought it was good. I enjoyed it very much. There were some nitpicks.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked it, though. It's fun to go back and see the Keepers of the Keys a little bit more, you know. And, it was different, you know. It was something we hadn't really seen before, so it felt kind of fresh and tense. And I thought the Gideon stuff was better than usual. So, yeah, I liked it.
Good. What about you, Paik?
Net positive. but yeah, I mean, like there are things that I really liked in this episode, and then there were things that really bothered me that I really didn't like.
Okay.
So again, it's just like, we've kind of nitpicked and talked about it the past couple weeks, so we might as well just round out these last two episodes. Like, we're just going to dish into what's going wrong with.
Yeah. I mean,
there's just some weird logical flaws in the writing that just really stump me and make me like, but what, why? Okay. Whatever. At this point, I'm like,
they don't care.
Whatever. Just get us there. I don't know.
I know. It's been a little frustrating. I share that. I think there were some things in this episode for me that I thought were good and better, but then other, you know, nitpicks. So I feel like I'm kind of half and half, but I did appreciate, I got a little bit of a Twin Peaks vibe from this episode. It was a little different, and I don't know if that was an infusion of Joe Hill or not, but it felt a little different than some of the other episodes from this season.
There was some, I don't know if I, because I knew Joe Hill was one of the writers, and maybe that sort of biased me to like it a little bit more, or was there actually something about it that was a little better? But I definitely liked it better than the last couple of episodes.
Good. Well, I think I saw a little, I think for the most part, what I saw online was more negative, and I think it was because of some of the writing or inconsistencies, but I think there, I did see some positive things being said about it as far as, you know, some of the things that happened or the visuals and things like that. So I'll be interested to hear what you guys think. But I want to add before we get into our points that, you know, we talked about it last week, but it was the return of the Great British Bake Off.
Yay!
Yeah, one of our favorites. So it's so catchy, right?
It is
just the best. It's just it's like an instant mood lifter. Mm-hmm. Honestly,
I watched the episode in case we get to talk about it a little bit later. And
yeah,
like that theme music and like entrance video started, and I was just noticed. I was like smiling.
Me too.
I was like, oh yay!
I was like, oh, I forgot to watch. I better watch it for the podcast. God, I got so much stuff to watch, but okay. And then a few seconds in, I was just endorphins kicking in, and then it lasted through the whole thing. And I was like, I'm so glad this show's back.
I know. It was instant for me as well. So we talked about it last week that it was coming back. It premiered, now we're recording this on a Wednesday. It premiered last Friday on Netflix, I should say. Let me just preface that. It I think airs on Tuesday nights in the UK and then releases on Netflix on Fridays. So they actually get a little bit of a leg up. So be careful of spoilers if you go. I tell you what, I got spoiled a couple times last year from the like Twitter and Facebook accounts from Great British Bake Off. And I was like, oh no, I can't scroll through social media because they've already talked about who won or who went home or whatever. But anyway, we talked about that we would still like to at least just kind of mention it, talk about it here on the podcast. But, you know, when we covered it last season, we talked, I think, more about it than what we had initially intended. And, you know, I don't know that we're going to dedicate that same amount of time, but we're probably at least going to just spend a couple of minutes on it. And I'm going to put, just for everyone, and this is why I'm talking about it now, so that way you know where to find it in the podcast. Also, if you're not interested in listening to us chat for a couple of minutes about Bake Off, then you can skip over it. I think I'm going to put it in after Book Talk, or not Book Talk, I'm on the wrong podcast, Comic Talk.
It's a book anyway.
It's a book. It's a graphic novel book, if you will. Sorry, I'm still in House of the Dragon, where we talk about Book Talk in a section. Comic Talk. I think we'll save that for after Comic Talk and kind of have it there at the end. And if folks want to listen, that would be great. We'd love to, you know, have you listen to that and share it. But
we haven't recorded anything yet, so just look right now and see how long this podcast is. If it's 3 hours long, you'll know that we were not able to keep to
failed horribly at trying to keep it short.
It's so hard. We thought we could do it that last year, and it was like, nope, we ended up going like 20, 30, sometimes 40 minutes or so, sometimes talking about some episodes.
We've already put in a good 10 minutes so far on this podcast.
That's why we're going to move on. Just wanted to give that little announcement that we're gonna talk at least just a couple of minutes. I'm gonna do my best to keep us on track. But anyway, with that being said, let's go ahead and jump into our top points for episode 7 of Lock and Key from season 3. Who went first last week?
I haven't gone first since episode 1.
Well, then please go first.
I forget week to week.
I do too. That's why I'm asking.
Would not be able to
I would never remember. So please, Jason.
Actually, I don't really care who goes first. I'll go first. Okay. So I'll start with Gordy, who, if you remember when we first saw him this season, he seemed hurt that he wasn't included in Ellie's friend circle, the Keepers of the Keys. And he just seemed like a bit of a, like a milquetoast kind of a nebbishy guy, right? Kind of, I don't know, meek and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of guy who's a little bit apologetic about himself or something, like just a little, not a whole lot, but just the fact that, I guess, that he came to her, like they were at the wedding and Ellie seemed like to want to chat and, you know, mingle and stuff, and he just came out with that, so he was just carrying that hurt around with him. Anyway, so then we wondered what part was he going to play. Is he a demon or what? And so now we see, and we see this flashback of them shutting him out. Perfect actor for young Gordy, by the way.
Yeah,
I think they used the time shift key and went back and got that actor, actually, and just brought him forward in time for this episode. He's saying, you know, they bring that Caliban monster, and then it bites him, and he's like, you know, tell me what did I just see? You know, it'd be great to feel like I'm not just a bit player in your stories. One of these days, I'm going to matter to you. And he's right about that. He's going to matter to them, at least for this episode. He's kind of like the star. And then when they're inside his, I'm going to jump around a little bit. When they're inside his head, a younger Mr. Ridgeway, one of his memories, telling him that he's giving the part that he wanted to Rendell Locke. And he's like, oh man. But then Rendell comes in. That's bullshit. I tried out as a joke. I'll drop out. And Gordy's like, no, I don't want to get the part like that. Even background actors have a part to play. So I feel like this whole thing with his story is like a meta commentary on the character of Gordy in this show, a side character in a show who in the show longs for the spotlight and finally ends up the star for a bit. And, cause in the show he's longing for to be more noticed, the character within the show, but also outside of the show, the character's kind of the side character. So it's kind of a fun meta commentary, but I don't think it's that deep or profound, you know, it's just kind of cute unless I'm missing something. But anyway, I loved how he's in his headspace, the star of all the plays and movies, with his name in lights and on billboards everywhere, because that's what he wants, you know. And I was thinking, I feel like my headspace would basically be an Apple store.
That's not hard to
you know, I know.
It's the big genius bar.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it would be.
Nice and clean and aesthetically.
And if you
pleasing.
Want to see my memory, you just pick up an iPhone and press play. So I like how his memories, it's like you're watching a play, you know, and you see a little bit of conversation and then the lights on that part of the stage go out and lights come out somewhere else and he goes off stage and then this new version of him comes on from later on in the timeline. That was really creative. I like that in his headspace, you see director's chairs labeled with memory categories, summer theater camp, awkward first kisses, Christmas mornings, and life's mysteries. And then I loved when they went, you know, for a while there we were in like full Gordy world with a bunch of different versions of him throughout his life. It reminded me of Legion. Did that pop up for you at all, Rima?
I don't know that I thought of Legion, but I did get like a little bit of a trippy feel, which yeah. was very much Legion.
It reminded me of that one episode that we really liked where David was walking through his girlfriend. I forgot her name now.
Sydney's
life. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Going through her experiences.
And, yeah.
And life. Yep.
So you see him picnicking with his mom with a strawberry and just showing they have a good relationship. Then he's kissing a girl and slow dancing with her at a high school dance. And then he comes out to the girl. And she's like, how long have you known? And he goes, a while, I think. Well, you should have told me. And then Gordy's mom is just a phase. And then he's sitting on a car next to a lake with maybe his first boyfriend kissing. And then his mom, or he's saying to his mom, Mom, please, if you would just meet him. And the mom closes the door in his face. And then later on in his life, he's unveiling the new Matheson High School Theater. But that whole thing about him coming out, I don't know how, but on first watch I completely missed that. I guess it was so fast, really? You know. Mm-hmm. But second watch,
I had the opposite effect where I was like, I don't even know what's going on with Tyler and Ellie. And then because I was so like fascinated with what was going on in Gordy's mind video,
yeah, it was interesting. It was sad, you know. That's another thing, like there's a lot of things that are sad about this character. One is that his mom didn't accept that he was gay. Another one is that he felt like he was never seen or noticed and wanted, and then he keeps trying to get parts and plays and he gets turned down when he was a kid. And also here he's like helping with this summer theater or whatever. He's like, can I just play this bit character? No. So it's really sad. And then that's not even the worst of it. Like present day Gordy, I mean, he seems to have done all right for himself, this nice beachfront home, but this woman, I mean, it's a trip. This woman who he felt like dissed him in high school shows up with some big mean looking dude holding a knife to her stomach and saying he wants a key that's hidden in your head. So that's like, whatever. But he did himself proud. Like Gideon picked him up by the face and threw him down and he still like grabbed this blunt object and came at him. I'm not afraid of you. So he was totally brave, whacked him in the face with it. But then Gideon stabbed him in the stomach, sealing his fate. And then he still told Ellie, do what you have to do to save yourself. So he was very honorable in all of that. And then she used the head key on him and he's fucking bleeding out and looking at his own bloody doppelganger, confused as hell and dying. Mm-hmm. And then dies. And then, you know, I mean, the other sad stuff I kind of have in another point about the keepers of the keys, but I'll just touch on it, that they stole his memories rather than just include him in their group. Mm-hmm. And they put this key in his head without his permission, which ended up leading to his death ultimately. So very tragic character. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for him. I'm going to drink one for Gordy right now. Here's to you, Gordy.
One for Gordy.
Cheers.
All right.
I feel bad for people like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're good people and they may have this demeanor where they don't seem confident and so they get overlooked or ignored.
That was good. Paik, what about you?
That was pretty much my first point I wanted to make too. So I was trying to see if Jason left me anything. No,
there's a lot of other stuff in the episode.
It's fine. It's fine. Right. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, because I definitely wanted to touch on a lot of that. And a lot of that was kind of I said, you know, this episode really was just a huge bummer when it came to Gordy, and we're getting his story. I mean, you know, in the past, he was like on the outside of his theater friends, in quotation marks. And then you mentioned even when he's on the phone with that guy trying to get that little small bit part in some Shakespeare in the Park kind of thing. And even now, as he's older, he's still just kind of walked on and ignored. But, I mean, he still seems to be doing well.
Yeah.
As far as, I mean, he's running the theater department at the high school. Mm-hmm. He's got a nice house. He's doing what he loves. And he lived a life that he, you know, loved, as far as he had a job that he loved and things like that.
He made
and
the best that he could out of it.
Yeah. I did love the headspace. A lot of all these different theaters playing out memories. I did take a note of a couple of them. That a high school horror show is running at Theater Embarrassment. So if you want to run over there and go check that out. And then over at the Drama Theater, you can see the play. You can see the play, Are They My Real Friends? Which, spoiler alert, no, they aren't. They suck.
Yeah, find some other friends.
Right. I wanted to touch on, I liked Kinsey and Tyler walking in on the performance, if you want to call it that, of Gordy's memory of when he lost that part to Rendell. I really loved the way that they showed this and acted it out. It was very theater on purpose. You know, the lighting cues, like you mentioned, the blocking, where they stood, how they got up and moved around, yeah, the way they faced, mm-hmm, delivery of their lines with projection, because mm-hmm, you kind of have to overact just the right amount for theater.
Yeah.
And they were doing that the way they were delivering lines. And I was like, man, that was actually really cool. Yeah. Like, it looked like a stage production. I was like, I like the way that they played that out.
Yeah. You know that people in the crew or, you know, who are helping with it have experience in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly.
Yep. And then the way that ended with Rendell kind of telling him, oh, you're not a, you know, bit part and don't ever think you are, and kind of giving him a hug. I was wondering, like, is that just Gordy's version of it? Because he was convinced that these people were still his friends in some way, that maybe he had a chance really fitting in with them. And so his memory is a little skewed with Rendell being that friendly. Or does that mean that maybe Rendell decided to be better to him because it's a separate point that I'll cover later, but because Rendell's a dick, at least he was.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that I just presumed that one scene showed that he had some of the good Rendell in him too, but who knows? Mm-hmm. Maybe you're right. It was just misremembering or something. I hope not.
Yeah. And I don't know. Oh gosh, I don't have it in front of me, so I cannot remember because I can't remember what happened yesterday, but. Aren't the memories kind of unreliable? Didn't they say something about viewing someone's memories in their head and how, you know, either they're from a certain perspective or they're not as reliable as to what you're actually seeing or something? I don't remember, but I feel like
I don't remember if they've touched on that, but I feel like, I mean, because that's just true in reality.
Yeah, that's your what I was going to say. They are, yeah.
Warp. Yeah. So I don't know. And then, of course, the lights going out, mm-hmm, literally, like forever. As Sam says, mm-hmm, like, how ominous is that? And, you know, like, poor Gordy. And I was like, you know, we don't want them getting trapped in his head if he dies. Again, they do. which I'm sure they'll have an answer to how to get out of that. And it will probably be something very simple that we just don't think of. That's usually how it goes in the first few minutes.
Yeah, they can't just be gone. I mean, when Rendell died, he had the Omega key in his head and they found it, mm-hmm, in his ashes. But that's a key. So when Gideon asked Ellie what happens if Gordy dies and he has that key inside, she didn't know, but we know that it would probably just be in his head or something. If they, we at least know that if they burned him, it would probably be in the ashes, but we don't know. Like if you burned Gordy, I don't think, Bodhi's going to be in the ashes.
Right. Yeah, I don't know where the people are.
Right.
Yeah. What
happens to happen to them?
And yeah,
maybe they'll go in Mirror World.
Oh. You can see, does that come back? Those sisters come back? Or are we just going to ignore that completely?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, maybe that has something to do with it, you know?
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, so you talked about, the Mind video, which what came with it, because it was also, it became this loop that Tyler, Kinsey, Sam, and Ellie were trapped in where they couldn't leave it, except, you know, they did manage to get out of it just enough to have their interaction with Gideon and get the key, and then they're back in the time loop, so I don't know how that works. But yeah, as they're stuck in that, I was trying to think kind of what was going on there. And what I could come up with is, I feel like it was maybe that, you know, life flashing before your eyes moment for Gordy.
Maybe, yeah.
Where he's shutting down, he's dying. Mm-hmm. And so his memories, like, yeah. all of that, like, if you want to equate memories to, like, electricity or energy or power in a cell or a battery, everything is just being pushed to that life flashing before your eyes moment. So everything else is shutting down. They can't escape because they're just stuck in that video loop because that's all that's left. Mm-hmm. That's how I kind of was like, maybe that's how it makes sense in my head. If I try to explain it, what was going on. But then we talked about what that video was.
That makes sense to me. I mean, it's just, I just felt like I didn't quite come to that sharp of a explanation for it. It was more just like, okay, he's dying, so everything's all chaotic in his head. But yeah, it could be like that whole life flashing before your eyes thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the video was really sad. Like I said, I focused on it immediately. Like that first time I was like, I got to see where this goes. And yeah, it was where we see it's him and his mom as he's a little kid. And it's like, shows it to be like this really sweet moment, but then you see that relationship as it goes on. I mean, he's dating this girl, then he comes out to her, and then she seems betrayed and upset. And then he kind of starts with his mom about that, and then she's being terrible about it. And then, yeah, so he then meets this guy and things seem to be going well, but then that's like his mom like disowns him or whatever, being a expletive removed for decency sake. No, you know, and just like kicking him out. And I was like, well, you're better off. She's trash. Whatever.
But he's looking for acceptance.
Yeah.
And so from his mother and from people who run theaters and everything.
Yeah. So as an adult, it seems like he really found his place. I'm sure there's still a lot of sadness in him, but it's better off. And then I was like, eh, remember kids, family actually isn't that important if they don't accept and love you. Just remember, But all in all, it does make me kind of very sad for the end of Gordy, you know, and what he seems to face here. Because after watching all that, I was like, again, it's like this is a side character that we haven't even cared about or thought about. Now after this episode, I'm like, he deserved better. Deserved more.
Which I think, as sad as it is good art, you know, within one episode. Just make you care about this guy. That's one reason why I like the episode and why I started off with that character, because I thought it was moving, the whole thing.
And then, yeah, I just kind of, the way it ends with, we were confused about the title last week. We were thinking, looking forward to it. And I'm like, well, there it is. It seems to be curtains for Gordy.
Final curtain call.
Final curtain. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was good. Well, I mean, Gordy was one of my points too. I don't know that I have a whole lot to say after you guys, have already covered it, but you know, I do think it was sad. We didn't get enough of him. And he, I think, was definitely a tragic figure, like you were saying, Jason, but we got a lot, even though this was like the one only episode we really got, more of him than what we've seen before, than just like one quick scene in other episodes of season. He was a stand-up guy. I admired that he didn't back down from Gideon. You know, he you know, went after him with the, I don't remember what it was he picked up from the table, but when he went after him and he's like, I'm not afraid of you. I mean, dude was like twice his size. You know, Gideon's like twice his size. And of course, he doesn't know exactly how dangerous he is, but he was literally holding a knife to Ellie's throat, and he wasn't going to let that stop him. So I was like, you know, you got these little bits of him and his character in this episode more than I think we have any other character in this series. I mean, he had the best character arc playing in the background while they were just running through his head, and he was still being treated like a side character in his own head, but he had like the best character arc. We got to see everything from whenever he was a kid to growing up, and his, you know, experiences with a girl, realizing, you know, that he's gay, and then coming out, and his experiences, looks like, I'm guessing, his first boyfriend, or at least a boyfriend that he cared about anyway, to see it on the screen. Got to see how he was treated by Rendell and his friends. And seeing how he was still, how he was constantly overlooked when he was a teenager, like it seemed like he never got the part. He was always the understudy because he's like, it's okay. He trusts me. He knows I learn all the lines. So it sounds like this is not the first time that he's been like, oh, you're just going to be the understudy. So, you know, to see that this is probably a constant thing for him, mm-hmm. It was really sad. And then to see it again in adulthood, that he still, you know, can't even play, you know, somewhat of a side character as one of the soldiers because, you know, oh, well, they're supposed to be younger, was just like, man, this dude, he just, it sucks. So it was just really sad to see that. And then to see him having to lie there bleeding out and staring at himself. The dude's got to be totally tripping out about what the hell is going on. You know, he doesn't know magic, doesn't understand magic. He doesn't know what the hell's going on. He's got Gideon busting in his house with Ellie and person he knows from high school. And then now this, you know, he gets beaten up, tossed around, stabbed and bleeding out and got a key stuck in his head. And he's laying there watching himself die. I mean, geez. Yeah, just felt really bad for the guy. So anyway, that probably repeated a lot of what you guys said, but that was my two cents on Gordy. I'll have more to say about young Gordy and the rest of the kids, but dude did something well for himself. I loved his house. It was beautiful. I don't know what the guy did, but gorgeous beach house. Side note. Anyway, Jason, what's your next point?
Well, I think one of you guys should go first so we don't just keep all say everything and then you guys just...
I think this episode was only, what, there's, like 30?
There are literally only like
minutes?
Four... Like, yeah, like...
Barely?
There was literally like just the points that we can make was what I came out to. Like, I was like, we're all going to have the same
things. We're all going to have the same things. So...
Not a lot to it.
I was going to say, yeah, it was a very short episode and... It all kind of mashed together. Go ahead.
No, you. One of you guys, go ahead.
Pake, go ahead.
Sure. I mean, just tacking on to, we've mentioned a little bit that the younger Gordy and the keepers of the keys. And so I'll talk about those a little bit. Just kind of, it was kind of a quick one, but really I was just like, Teen Rendell sucks. and it's just, what, you know, which... starts off the episode kind of there with the drawing key, which I was like, there it is. Again, big props to Jade for remembering that what we all clearly just forgot about and moved on with our lives. But she knew it was coming. And then when she mentioned that last week, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's definitely got to be what it is. And it was. And then, yeah, Rendell was just kind of a dick. Like, those moments and flashbacks kept going, I was like, can I be on team, like, Rendell sucks? I mean, hey, like, he seems to have grown into a really good man, great father and husband. But as a kid, like, what a douche canoe.
Yeah.
And then I was like, you know, and Aaron and Ellie were not blameless either. I mean, they played along with the scheme of going inside Gordy's head to, like, show him his headspace and the memories. And, like, it makes it seem like, oh, they're going to let him in on the Keeper's secret and magic. And they legitimately just went in there to take the memory of this drawn Caliban and then even the current memory they're making right there of him going into his head out just to kind of continue to push him to the side. And I was like, man.
Yeah.
Dick move.
That, I mean, you could say maybe they were justifying that because they've made some rule that just to keep everyone safe, they don't want to let anyone else in on their secrets or something. But then they're being really reckless with the magic. So it really just felt more like... they're a clique, you know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it did feel very clicky.
And in the worst way, like, that is such a violation to do to somebody without their permission, both taking the memories and leaving something like that in his head. It's pretty reprehensible, I would say. I mean, they're teenagers, but still, man, that's awful.
Right.
I know.
Which
I tried to think of, curious. Remember that they're teenagers, and I don't know, I did a lot of dumb shit whenever I was a teenager too, but man, it was hard to overlook how completely reckless that they were sometimes.
Like, it seems like they just didn't really care that they were hurting Gordy emotionally. Like, they're like, eh, it's whatever. He'll be fine. You know?
Rendell, yeah, came off like a straight up villain inside Gordy's head. Like, straight he was jerk. Like smirking about the whole thing.
But I was curious and questioning, because hiding the drawing key in Gordy's head, I mean, Rendell had nothing to do with that. Rendell was so on board with, oh, we're going to use the drawing key to do all this and, point, this and this and this. And Aaron and Ellie were kind of against it. So I was like, you know, why did they decide to hide it from Rendell's? Like, did they feel that it was too dangerous in Rendell's hands? Yes. They didn't trust Rendell. And then I was like, well, wouldn't he have immediately and constantly been asking about it for ever?
Where's the key?
What happened to that key that I had so many big plans for?
Well, I mean, it seems like, well, we know he didn't get to use it because it was still in Gordy's head, but I liked that one of Gordy's memories was the Keepers of the Keys putting on the play, The Tempest, and you see Aaron with the little puppet that Rendell mocked using it, you know, so that's what ended up happening.
Right.
But I think, Ellie and Aaron, young Ellie and young Aaron, were sharing so many looks about Rendell just being so cavalier about bringing this little monster to life. And so, and then when they were in Gordy's head, they looked at each other too. And they, they decided to put it in there to hide from Rendell. That was pretty clear to me. But yeah, I mean, if Rendell had asked for it after that, they would just say, I'm not going to tell you where it is, or I don't know where it is, or something, you know?
Right. It just, it seems like because we talk about it being such a click that, then it's weird that this happened. I'm like, that is quite the secret and like bit of distrust that was just going to sit there and like within this group of the
maybe
keepers
they like
for however long
they went into Rendell's head and took the memory of the, it's called the creation key online, the creation key out. Cause that's how they roll.
Right. Seems to be the answer. So yeah, that was just kind of really the thoughts was, I thought it was, not really weird that they did it, because clearly Rendell at that age was on this weird, like very selfish power kick with the keys, and it probably was for good, but it is weird that you know, as close as they were, that would have been kind of just like a seed of distrust that would have just sat there and grown, I would think. But
yeah, conflict.
We don't really get any more of that. I don't think we will, because we don't have time. We have one episode left.
I know.
Like, that backstory.
As much as I didn't agree with the Keepers of the Keys behavior, I thought, because I don't think we've really seen them fully like that. We've seen flashbacks of when Lucas killed Jeff and Kim, and then Rendell killed Lucas, who was, you know, possessed by the demon. But I feel like that was just quick. We really didn't get a sense of them until now, or else I'm forgetting something. But did you go in my head and take some memories out? No, I'm just kidding. so it was good to see this. And even though I didn't agree with their behavior, it felt, I liked the character. I liked seeing the characters. I wonder if the writers intended on having these characters in future seasons, you know, more flashbacks. And I would welcome that. And I thought the actors were all good. And it was cool that they had some conflict, just like we've seen among the teenagers in the current day, you know, like they could totally build more stories around these younger versions of the characters. It was feel more fully fleshed out. You know, if they sometimes, if they were all just on the same page, then it wouldn't seem as, fully fleshed out as what we've seen from like Tyler and Kinsey and Bodhi and everything. So I kind of liked that part of it, even though I didn't approve of Rendell. It was interesting to watch.
Yeah. Pake, anything? Was that it for you? Okay.
Yeah, that's it there. So
all right.
I'm sure that you both have similar points. So there's like, I'll leave for you guys to expound on those.
Yeah. Okay, Jason, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Keepers of the Keys. So it was interesting to me that they were in high school in 1995 with Collective Soul playing.
That took
me back. Let Your Light Shine Down. Cause I, without really thinking about it too hard, just somewhere in my brain, it was in the '70s because 30 years ago was in the '70s, right?
Forever and always. Yeah. Will be.
And, I looked in the comic, Rendell was born in 1970. So they would have been in like the late 80s. but you know, they moved it forward in the show, which makes total sense. So anyway, the keepers of the keys are Rendell, Aaron, Rendell's girlfriend at the time, Ellie, Jeff and Kim are the two that Dodge killed. Lucas slash Dodge, possessed by a demon, killed by Rendell, brought back by Ellie, etc. And Mark, who hid all the keys and then later killed himself with a matchstick key. But here we only see Rendell, Aaron, Ellie, and Jeff. And we didn't see Lucas. And Rendell, young Rendell, says, I can't wait to show Lucas this Caliban. He's going to love it. I wonder if they just couldn't get the actor, you know, because it would
have been, that's probably what
would have been cool.
No Mark either.
No Mark. That's the other one. Or Kim, although I think we did see Kim in the memory of the play, even though she wasn't in the other interactions because there was one girl on stage that was different. But anyway, yeah, no Mark and no Lucas and maybe no Kim. And so, yeah, Rendell is, I have here in my notes, Rendell's kind of a reckless asshole who draws Caliban from the Tempest, from Shakespeare's The Tempest. I guess because he wanted Caliban to play the part, right? They're doing a production of The Tempest, so he's like, I'll just draw. Like, this character's hard to do. People do him as like all kinds of different things because he's half man, half monster. But I think I read there was like a turtle version, and they just interpret him in all kinds of different ways. But he's a tragic figure in the play, maybe kind of like Gordy. I wonder if they meant that sort of he's sort of an outcast. But he's also a monster, and just he does bad things in the play, and probably not the best thing to bring to life. But I loved seeing it, all snorty with sharp teeth and this evil smile. It reminded me of Gremlins or Ghoulies, you know, some 80s horror movie, little guy. And Rendell's like, isn't it awesome? And then I loved how he kept spouting out lines from the play. There's wood enough within. He knows his lines. That's the first line. And Jeff's like, absolutely not. This thing needs to go away now. Get rid of it, Rendell. You guys are no fun. I'm like, seriously? God, you're even worse than the Lock Kids with this stuff. And then it bites Gordy. And then I love Rendell erased it. But what he takes from it is they should make a bigger one. This is a trial run. We should make a bigger one. Like they're going to draw a life, get a big giant piece of poster board and draw a life size one on there or something like that. Then my note here is they're kind of cliquish dicks. And I think we already kind of covered all that, but I'm like, why not just tell Gordy what's up? And then, you know, he goes and tells Mr. Ridgway and they just kind of royally fuck him over. But I don't want to repeat all that. I just thought it was really sad and it ended up costing him his life. I think, you know, leaving that key in his head. Yeah, I guess that's all I had to say about them.
I agree with both of what y'all just said. It was a little disheartening to see, you know, Rendell that way. Cause like you said, we haven't got to see a whole lot of the young, them and their younger selves and, young Rendell Locke. And I didn't like what I saw in this episode. I don't know what, maybe it was just adulthood. Like I said, I've done dumb shit as a kid and you grow and learn from the mistakes and stuff. So the Rendell we knew, or that we saw in flashbacks, seemed like a pretty good guy with his head on his shoulders. And so it was really disheartening to see that he was a jerk and I thought kind of thoughtless and didn't have any, care for Gordy's feelings or anything like that. I don't like how they treated Gordy. You know, they gaslighted him, they broke into his mind, violated his privacy, used him to hide a magical item that ended up getting him killed. You know, I was like, that's not cool. And I mean, the rest of them don't have, you know, they have to take as much blame for that as too. I mean, Ellie was really complicit in all of that too, having that idea to hide. I mean, I'm not clear, I guess, and I don't know if we'll see if we'll see it again in the finale, why they felt the need to hide the creation key. Like, did they think it was so dangerous? Like, I know Rendell had like this crazy thought to create something bigger, for the play, but were they so concerned they felt they had to hide it in someone else's head?
Yeah.
Like they had to go to those lengths, to do that.
They couldn't.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I got from the episode. They kept looking at each other whenever Rendell would say, oh yeah, this is great. We need to make, let's make a bigger one. And they're like, oh my God, no, no. They were seriously distraught.
Rendell's about to kill a bunch of people right in the theater with a giant Caliban.
Yeah. And right before they hit it, they looked at each other again. So, I mean, it was pretty clear to me that they were just hiding it from Rendell.
Yeah, he definitely wasn't thinking things through. I don't know how he thought he was going to control. I mean, they couldn't even control like this mini version of this thing. What are you going to do?
I guess he thought, I'll just erase it, or I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. Like maybe, you know, this show, because Rendell is such a nice guy and responsible person growing up. So maybe this is saying, I mean, you have that saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So they got these keys and just thought, hey, we're the shit, or especially him, you know, and he just sort of got reckless with it. But then when Dodge, and by the way, that's also very consistent with taking out Duncan's memories, which I never totally approved of either. But anyway, then maybe when the whole thing happened with Dodge killing Jeff and Kim and all of that, that just matured him real quick. You know, that was a turning point that changed the trajectory of his whole life.
Forgot about Duncan. Yeah. So yeah, that's consistent. So yeah, Rendell's answer was always just control alt delete. Mm-hmm.
Until that happened. Like, and then I think he became more of a mature adult.
Yeah. I just, it definitely just rubbed me the wrong way. The way that he was behaving inside Gordy's head, you know, and just being so thoughtless and callous about it. I don't know that I trusted that memory that Gordy had with him where he's like, you're not just a side player. You know, I think that was a little bit unreliable because I don't know if things did somehow turn around for them or not, or if they realized, you know, oh, we kind of did him wrong. But I don't know. I thought I didn't like that behavior. It rubbed me the wrong way. So didn't like it. All right. Who wants to go next now that we're out of order?
Why don't you go first this time?
Just, like, I like that. Let's just
flip we're just going to flip the script.
You go again. Two ice in a row, Rima.
Oh, yeah. Good. Because
then each one of us gets a chance to introduce a different topic.
I mean, mine is just, my last one is just really, really short. And it's just like the end, which we've kind of touched on. It was a whole cluster event there at the end. You know, we've got Rufus getting arrested by the cops. Gordy, I'm assuming, is dead. And I was kind of confused by that for a while. Like, which Gordy went with the paramedics? Was that even...
It was funny they addressed it. Which one? I don't know. Both. when they were talking about putting pressure on it.
Yeah. I was like, well, does that even do anything? If they're... And I don't know what you call the version of that person that's outside of their head. Do they have a name for that?
I called it something in my notes and I don't remember.
Well,
I say doppelganger, but I don't know.
I mean, that's a good term, I think.
The magic copy is what I call it.
Well, or a copy. There you go. That's good too. But, you know, does that even do anything to try to save this copy of Gordy? I don't know.
Right.
I hurt my brain trying to figure all that out while I was watching this.
They sent one in an ambulance, right?
Yes.
But it was copy. Not probably, I would assume, the one that had the key in
its head. It was the copy. The one that had
it. Yeah.
The one in the
garage. The one with the key in the head is your original body. Yeah. So that means that might have been completely pointless do anything with that body.
Right. And then I wonder if he then dies, or if the key was taken out, or when he dies, does that body, the copy body that was in the ambulance, just vanish? Because that's going to fuck up those paramedics bad.
What happened to the body?
Oh, God.
This is going to be a lot of paperwork.
Yeah. Somebody's got some splaining to do.
So, and then they find it back at the home. And this is horrible to laugh about, but we had it in the ambulance, Gordy. I swear.
I swear we picked him up. I don't know.
Bad as a keeper of the keys, making fun of poor Gordy and his death.
Sorry.
But it's a fair question because, what happens now? And they're going to have to figure it out, right? Somehow they're not going to be just trapped in their head. But, you know, it was very frustrating, all of that, as they're in Gordy's head looking for the key. And I know that their goal, yes, was to go help Ellie and then find the key because that's what Gideon wanted. But then once Gideon was trapped and they are just goofing, and they're all staring at each other when they should be like, let's get out of here. And, you know, it's like, why do you need the key anymore if Gideon is trapped? They could have just left. They didn't need the key anymore. And that was part was frustrating to me and didn't make sense to me.
I think they presumed. I thought that was more of a delaying tactic. You mean just leave him in the head, though?
Leave Gideon in his head along with the key.
Yeah, I guess
so. And you don't even need the key anymore. Yeah. Just get out.
Just don't open the... Just make sure not to ever open his head again.
Yeah.
But what if Gideon is in there just like messing around with Gordy's memories and stuff?
I don't know. It just didn't make sense to me. Just get out. And then they end up being trapped. It just felt like they were
trying to get out, but it was...
They went looking for the key. While they were looking for the key, they wasted all of this time when they could have just left. They didn't need the key at that point.
I don't know. I wouldn't want a demon left in my head.
Well, I mean, it sounds like...
You got enough of them there already.
Yeah, it's like I don't need any more. Got like
but I mean, if they couldn't save Gordy anyway, I mean, sad to but... It looks like he died. So.
He's dead, but they didn't know that for sure.
How are we doing this?
Let's rush about. No, I'll just kidding. You go. I think it's my turn, right? I haven't talked the longest. Okay, I don't know if that's true, but I'll do keys and magic. So this, what they call online, is the creation key. We were calling it the drawing key. That seems good too. Anyways, at first I wasn't sure how it worked. I guess I wasn't paying close enough attention on first watch. I saw that Caliban come to life, but I'm like, well, how did the key exactly work with that? And then I'm like, oh, the key's like a pencil. You draw it with the key. But how does it know when you're done? Is it like your intention?
Probably. Sounds right.
Yeah. And then to get rid of it, whatever you made real, you touch it with the butt end, which I liked because that's where the eraser would be. And let's see. One of the sisters from episode one, which I do think will come back in the finale, said there's one key that could bring a simple drawing to wicked life. So that made me wonder if no matter what you draw, is it wicked? You'd think not. Like, you draw an apple, it's not going to attack you. But it may poison you if you eat it. I don't know. Anyway.
Right.
It's a weird way to put it.
Did she mean that, just like adding that word in as flavor? Was it literal word? Was she from Boston?
She's from Boston.
Wicked smart.
Brings it back to wicked life. So I presume they will use this key in the current day in the final episode because they haven't gotten to use it yet. And also Kinsey's an artist. And I also kind of wonder if that's why they made a point of showing Tyler drawing that like meticulously crafted blueprint of Key House a couple episodes back. Maybe he will draw something. But I would guess that Kinsey will draw something.
Maybe she'll draw a door out of Gordy's head or a door out.
Yeah. Something.
Magical door, or maybe she'll draw the anywhere key.
How abstract can your drawings be? Like, I'm drawing the concept of Gideon's gone.
Other magic stuff. Nina and Bodhi try to break into the Harlequin chest. I knew that wasn't going to work. It's a magic chest. That's the whole point of it. You can't break into it with power tools.
It's defending itself with magic. The magical chest is defending itself with magic.
Who would have thunk it?
Wow. Yeah. When they tried setting on fire, I liked that Bodhi was all stoked just to be setting anything on fire, basically.
Watching that scene, I was like, that wasn't even Bodhi. I was like, that was Jackson just being a boy having fun playing with fire. Like, he was,
Relatable. I'm a huge fire bug, so I totally related to his joy in that moment of getting to set something on fire.
You should go to Burning Man. There's fire spinners, explosions, fire everywhere, pretty much.
I want to play with the fire. I don't want to watch the fire.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, learn how to spin fire. you know, when the rain came down and she said, magic's protecting it, I thought that was kind of fun and cute, but also, like, was it necessary? Because it's already impervious to power tools, so why not just be impervious to fire? And I think they did it to explain why they couldn't put it in the well house, you know, because it does other things magical, not just being really strong and can't get in. And I thought it was such a great idea to put it into the well house so Gideon can't get to it. And I presume the anywhere key is in the chest, so he can't use that to get to it. He would have to send someone else in, but he can't get it directly. But then it appears in the house. And then I was sort of like, why? Like when they lit it on fire, it used magic to protect itself from being open. But if it's just sitting in there in the well house, it's fine. It's not in danger.
That's like my biggest complaint of this episode was this chest. Cause I was like, it's designed to be indestructible, but it's not designed to make sure a demon can open it.
Yeah.
Like I don't,
is it to keep it from
the well, sitting in the well house is doing zero damage to it. It should have stayed there. I don't understand why.
It was a fun moment, but it made no sense.
Could it have,
it made me so mad. I was like, this is dumb logic and I don't get it.
Could it have maybe to protect itself from being stolen?
I guess.
Like, Gideon had the Harlequin key, so technically he would be the owner of it. So it would, stay there where he
left it. Stay where, I mean, he left it in the basement, right? And they brought it upstairs? I'm not positive about that. Maybe it was already upstairs. Maybe you're right.
I don't remember if they took it downstairs.
Maybe it just goes back to the where he left it.
Yeah, he brought it upstairs to get
okay. Yeah, let's say that.
Stuff out of it.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm literally throwing shit at the wall to see what sticks.
If they would have just said something like that, it would have made it better for me. Because it just feels like the writers, like I said last time, are like, hey, lunch is in a half an hour. Can we just get this episode written so we can go to Wendy's?
And, like, and then Bodhi has this really good idea of leaving it in the well house. That's an amazing idea. But how does that backfire on him? oh, crap. It's actually a perfect plan. I don't know. It transports back into the house. But don't worry about it. Just go with it.
So another magic thing. Inside Gordy's head, Gideon flips this piano on top of Sam in Bolton's body. And I had all these questions come up. What happens if you're a ghost possessing someone and they die? Will the ghost be free or will you be dead? What happens if you're a ghost possessing an echo, which normally can't die, but you get a mortal wound like that? What happens if you're a ghost possessing an echo and you're in someone's headspace and you get a mortal wound? What happens if you're a ghost possessing an echo, you're in someone's headspace, you get a mortal wound, and then the person whose head you're in dies? So there's all the, with a lot of other things, there's all these different forces at play. But I believe the point was that Sam's dead. I don't know, though. What do you guys think? Is he dead or not?
I mean,
like he died redeeming himself, protecting the locks, you know, or helping the locks.
Because he's an echo.
I mean, he's like in the same boat that the locks are in, and Ellie's. So like,
he's in the same boat, but a little different because he had a piano dropped on him, and he's a ghost possessing an echo. But still, they're in someone's head. So
I mean, I don't know what happens if they're in their head, but I mean, if he did die, if something did manage to kill him, even though he's in an echo's body and should be indestructible, I guess, he would just pass on, wouldn't he? He's only a ghost because he went through the ghost door and stuck there on Key House grounds. If he had an actual body and died, I guess he would just, like, if there's a place where you move on, he would just move on. He wouldn't be a ghost.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, I think he's not exactly in the same boat as the locks but if they survive, which they will, clearly, obviously, that I don't think that necessarily means that Sam is going to survive either, but I guess we'll just wait and see. We don't need to know. I think we talked about everything else. I mean, there's the big one where Gordy dies while the locks are inside his head, and so it'll be interesting to see how they get out of this one. They may appear in the mirror dimension. That's what I'm thinking now. I don't know why that would happen, but the writers can just say it happened.
It works.
You'd say there doesn't really have to be any explanation or logic behind it at all. If the next episode starts with them there in that mirror dimension and just be like, okay.
Sure. That's what happens.
That's what happens when you die. So that's all I had about magic and keys in this episode. I like that key. I wish this show was as well written as it was when it started, and then they had more seasons, because it would be fun to see them do more stuff with that key.
Right.
Yeah, I love all the magic stuff. For sure. Paik?
My last point, I just wanted to talk about Gideon for a little bit. Some of his moments and things this episode that I liked. First time we see in the episode, I was like, is it stupid, goofy humor? Absolutely. Do I still love it and think it's hilarious that he is so fascinated with power windows? Yes. Yes, that was for sure. He loves himself a good horseless carriage.
I laughed at that too. I mean, it might have been a bit cheese ball, but I was like, yeah, it would make sense. The dude's funny. From colonial times.
He sticks
times,
his head out the window like a dog.
I was waiting for a hereditary moment.
He's starting to realize the pleasures of Meat World. Maybe change his mind.
Not want to destroy it.
Right. That's what he said. Cars are his favorite thing about this world right now. It does get a little intense when he's making Ellie keep going faster. He's like in this weird, like, adrenaline thrill role play. Seeking. Pretend you're being chased.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's hilarious. I liked it. I like Gideon in this episode.
Yeah, he was more of a villain and had more to him in this episode than other right. episodes. I think that, you know, he wasn't as, I know a lot of listeners have expressed frustration that they just don't really buy him as a very good villain and stuff. And I think this episode, he did a lot better. They gave him more.
Yeah. Because Ellie, she tries to take advantage of the whole him sticking his head out and going faster, fails, obviously. You know, an immortal being can handle a little bit more than hitting his head on the dashboard, right?
She's desperate.
Yeah. But you mentioned we see him more in villain. Like, the moment when he stabs Gordy, I was like, he just fatally stabbed Gordy. I was like, there's our stakes. Mm-hmm. That's the brutality of Gideon that we've been kind of talking about and wanting this whole
thing.
That
was brutal. Yeah.
It's right there.
Yeah.
Well, he scalped that librarian, and that was pretty bad. And then, he stabbed Gordy. I was like, oh my gosh, that dude. If you didn't think he was bad, there you go.
I liked and disliked at the same time. Ellie leaving Gideon under the stage with Gordy's negative emotions. I think it was a really smart play, and it was really a creative way of her getting out there and kind of leaving him behind. Although I don't buy so much that he would have struggled with them as much as he did.
I didn't like it, because how did she know they wouldn't go after her? And why did they not go after her? And how did she know they were there? And why were they just sitting there quietly under those sheets waiting for someone to discover them? So it was an interesting idea, but I think in the Breaking Bad writer's room, they would have come up with that idea, talked it over, and realized, no, we can't do it, or figured out a better way to do it.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the piano he's playing is the one that the key is hidden in. That's just how it's got to work. It's like, we found the key, and Gideon is sitting there.
For some reason, as an evil villain, piano.
As a virtuoso now. And then he doesn't think that like one key that he's hitting doesn't play is odd. Like, as the group is wandering in, he's like, where's the key? Think, I don't know. Think.
And he still can't take the key, right? I mean, they still have to, he can't just take it.
I don't know. How does that work?
Well, let's see. The last person that had it was Ellie, right? Or Aaron. So I don't know. She's not a lock. So I don't think, I think he could have.
I just don't think he was clear. Then we talk about Sam staying back to fight him off while the others slowly escaped, turning around every few seconds to, are you sure you're not coming with us? Where do we go? And it's just freaking go. But alas, with much CGI, Gideon flips the piano onto Sam, pinning him down. Mm-hmm. A symphony of disappointment for Sam. Of course, I don't think Sam ever planned on really coming out. It's his conversation he had with Nina and them. He was ready to sacrifice himself if need be. He knew he was like, anything I have to do, I'm going to do for them. If that means, and he's probably tired of living as a ghost with nothing. He was like, if I can move on from this in a bout of heroism, then let's do it.
I agree. I don't think he intended. I mean, I don't know what happens next, but I don't think he was planning on leaving with them. And if that's what it took, to save them, and try to get a little bit of redemption. So I agree with that.
But yeah, and that's kind of where we end with Gideon in this episode too. So pins Sam down and then is taking off after them. But then we don't know what happens to anybody that was in Gordy's head, because curtain. So I don't know.
Final we'll curtain. That's good. Any notes? Anyone have any notes?
Yeah. So I, when Ellie slammed on the brakes and ran into the forest, I thought that was a nice scene. Her, I mean, beautiful for a second is what I meant, with the lush green, thick trees and quiet, you know, but terrifying. And then she's running just frantic, and then you hear like that, and that was effective for me. I thought it was creepy, and then all of a sudden he's right behind her, and so that was just another little bit that made me feel like this is one of the more, I don't know, he's still not very deep, but it was more enjoyable Gideon stuff in this episode.
It was for good creepy forest. I liked that scenery and imagery. It was scary.
That's what I'm saying. I thought the guy who plays Bolton slash Sam is Ian Lake, and I thought he was really good in this, and he really had young Sam's vibe and mannerisms. And when he confronted, or when Nina confronted him, I was moved by that. You know, Mrs. Locke, I can never apologize enough for what I did to you and your family. I'm more sorry than you could ever imagine. You expect me to forgive you? I don't expect you to. I just want the opportunity to help you and your family. I found all that touching. I also would not forgive him ever if I was them, because you killed our father, you know, and my husband. Right. So,
I have a quote of myself. I was like, if I put myself in the Locke's position, and I think what I would kind of say, or I'd be as like, I'm really happy for you that you're making something better of yourself, and I hope you forgive yourself and you can be better, but I don't want you in my life in any capacity for this at all.
Like, and that's kind of what she did say. Like, they're really desperate for help, and the kids are vouching that he really is sorry and wants to help. And that's what Nina said. Okay, fine, but that's as far as this goes. That was like her line, you know? So she did say that. And I can agree with that. And I think he had a moving performance. I believe that Sam is actually repentant clearly and wants, he would, to the point where he would give up his life to help them, and yet still, fuck you, man. Like, you can leave me alone after this.
I appreciate that he's not seeking forgiveness. It's just kind of, because he knows he did the worst possible thing he could probably do to this family. So his atonement is more just for him trying to make up for himself, his own soul. I mean, his own, you know,
Just he's trying to do something positive for them. And he did. He redeemed himself. And, well, he kept Gideon back while they tried to escape, but it wasn't enough because they couldn't get out. And I liked when he tied Gideon's leg to one of those, like, pulley rope sandbag theater thingies or whatever it is. What treachery is this, Bolton? Which is very Shakespearean. So I like that, you know, the writers have a sense of humor. And Gideon is English and lived much closer to the time of Shakespeare than we do. But anyway, what else? I had a couple more. I wish Joe Hill would have been able to write more of this series. That would be cool. And you kind of mentioned it, but I liked when Sam said, you know, the lights are flickering in Gordy's headspace, and Sam goes, the lights are going out. And Tyler's like, thanks, Sam. Appreciate the update. And he goes, no, I mean forever. That was a nice line. And then I like the last note. I like the moment when Nina said, so Bodhi, when Dodge was in your body, the way you were acting with Josh, that was all Dodge, right? And Bodhi didn't answer that, but I think not answering was an answer.
Yeah. Well, it was a weird question, 'cause I was like, well, yes, because that's how body possession works. Bodhi wasn't in there in any capacity. However, it's clear, that Bodhi was very uncomfortable with Nina and Josh's relationship right now for his own reasons.
But it's not how it works, I don't think, because I think when Jackie was, or one of them, when they were possessed and then came back to themselves, said they were aware the whole time.
Yeah, but Bodhi's was different because he was a ghost floating around on the outside. I thought Eden wasn't connected to the body at all.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Yeah, that wasn't even, he wasn't even there and aware of it. So that was, yeah I retract my amusement at that line. It makes no sense. Oh, well.
Yeah, because he it was nothing to do with it. But I mean, he clearly kind of knows what she's talking about. And he's like, so his non-answer is still him being like, yeah, I'm like, still not comfortable with it.
Like, I wasn't there, but if I would have been, it wouldn't have been much different.
I mean, I don't know if I'd say it wouldn't be much. Bodhi's a sweetheart. It. Like, he would never treat Josh the way that Josh did.
But he already said he didn't like it, you know, before that. Yeah.
He was acting out quite a bit before the whole possession thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So clearly not comfortable. Nina's pushing a little hard. Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other notes?
Nope.
No? Well, oh, for him. I appreciated that conversation. I see where Bodhi was coming from there. I mean, coming from somebody who has, as a kid, about Bodhi's age, lost a parent, and then my living parent decided to remarry somebody that I didn't really know that well or wasn't that fond of pretty quickly. I relate. I get it. You know, like,
sure.
Kind of feel like you have no say. So really all you can do is kind of take it out on the step parent, the other person, even though it's not even gone that far with Nina and Josh, but still that's where Bodhi's looking at it is going, oh, you're just trying to move on and replace things and forget. And so I can totally relate to how he's definitely uncomfortable and not happy with it.
Oh, totally.
Even if Josh is a great guy, you know, it's still like, no. So I get that. Bodhi turned to Team Sam very fast after their ghost encounters with each other. But it makes sense that Nina is still very angry and disgusted at him.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and I Kinsey said, I'm not ready to forgive him yet. And I feel like she should have said, I don't forgive him either, but we could use him here.
Right.
I don't know. That's just me bringing my own bias to
it. Yeah. I was like, I don't think I could ever forgive him, but to be okay with him living his own life and hopefully be doing better for himself apart from me somewhere else. Sure. You know, let's see if I had any other notes we talked about much of other than me just really hurting my brain, with Gordy's bodies, but bodies leads to think that they're dead and he wasn't dead at that point. But, I don't, you know, Tyler's, which one do we, you know, it's like, we got to hold the bleeding. Like, which one? I was like, well, maybe the one with the key in its neck.
Yeah. Try that one. If you're going to pick one, pick the one that has the body, right. The original body.
It was an interesting question. It's like, well, how are they both bodies are in, you know, connected yet separate? And I was like, ow, my brain. Because I had to stop thinking about these implications of like, okay, so like the newer magic copy version of somebody, what if you died while the quote unquote real you has the head key in their place? Then do you die or do you just wake up in the other body? And I was like, I can't do this to myself right now.
I mean, really, there's no answer to that until the writers make up an answer, you know, right. And they probably haven't bothered to. But it was interesting that inside the ambulance, the magic copy did have like a pulse and readings and everything.
Yeah, that's what was weird. It wasn't, I don't know, I don't get it. But I was curious why even the copy of himself was even injured too. Like, why would the copy of you also be injured?
Because it's a copy.
Because isn't that kind of just like the head version of you that can go into your in and out of your head while the other version is there? So is it a real you? Again, questions that don't have answers, and I just did spiral.
I know. It's never ending.
Yeah. And then I didn't really have any other notes other than just Rufus. Like, there's not much of a note about him other than just, like, very wrong place, very wrong time.
No kidding.
The cops, I mean, it was kind of dumb. They're like, a guy opens the door with clearly in an agitated state and blood all over his shirt, and they're like, we heard reportings of a stabbing here. And then like, oh, you.
Calculating, yeah, calculating, exactly. Calculating. Ah,
wait a minute.
Took a while to load.
Any other notes?
Nope. That's it.
All right. Well, until the next we'll get those answers maybe. Think they can wrap it all up in one more episode? It's a tall, tall order. Oh, Paige, you got to keep those expectations real low.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like some shows where there's all this story left to be tied up. Really, they just need to get rid of Gideon, right? That's it. And be alive. And then, you know, have some sort of a status to move forward from. So, yeah, I think they can do that. No problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I think they can wrap up the story of the Locks and what's going on nicely. Yeah, whether we get answers to all of these magical questions we have, no. And I don't think we ever were going to get them. No. It just, those are just plot to move things along.
No, yeah, yeah. But I wonder if they'll, well, I was going to say they'll like put all the keys in the Harlequin chest and throw it into the ocean, but then wouldn't it just appear back in the house? I don't know.
Apparently now, but yeah, it would.
I feel like that they might be leading to actually, man, I shouldn't even say that, because what if it happens? But where they decide not to use the keys anymore.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm. Show over.
Any predictions?
Locks and no keys.
Season 4, Lock.
Any predictions for how they wrap it?
That was my prediction. Mm. They decide not to use the keys anymore.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good bet. I've had that same thought. They'll find a way to defeat Gideon, and then yeah, probably just come together and be like, these keys have caused nothing but trouble. I mean, it all started when Ellie used the Echo key, really, all of the major stuff that's happened here. So I think, yeah, it's just caused too much trouble. Bodhi's going to be mad about it because he's got such a young life still to live playing with keys and having fun, but it's worth it. But to not do it. But
put them all in the Harlequin chest and makes sense. Throw it away.
I predict the sisters will come back in some way. And it seems weird to have Carly just go away like that. So maybe Tyler will go off and find Carly again and get his job back or something.
I could see that. Then maybe Kinsey moves to England to go be with Scott. I don't know. Hopeful thinking.
Yeah,
maybe
use that anywhere key one more time.
Let's go do our own things. Yeah. Right, yeah.
Cool. I guess we'll see.
Bodhi can't go anywhere. He's too young. Yeah. He's stuck at home.
Stuck with Mina and Josh. He'll be a sullen kid because he hates Josh.
Oh, hopefully he'll come around. Maybe they'll make a connection. I predict that too. I think Bodhi will make a connection with Josh.
Him and Jamie, yeah. You'd think that that would help a little bit.
That would help a little, yeah. Get a new sister.
Yeah, best friends, and that's her dad.
She's all right, so yeah.
Yeah, she's awesome.
What about you? Do you have any other thoughts about what might happen or what you hope?
Nope.
Nothing.
I got nothing.
All right.
Okay. So we did get a little bit of listener feedback, a little light this week, but first one that we've got is from Lindsay Schlicht. She says, "This was a much better episode for me. I'm glad we got to see multiple facets of Rendell. The opening scene and then subsequently tricking Gordy really made Rendell seem like a jerk. His later interaction with Gordy was sweet. If this was a different kind of show, Gideon hanging his hat out the window would have had major hereditary potential. I wouldn't have minded Gideon's dumb head somewhere on the highway."
Dumb head.
Gordy's head is pretty interesting. I can't decide if it would be fun or annoying to have a constant stream of musical theater in your head. I really enjoyed all the bits in his head, the basement of his fears, the way that his lights were going out, in quotes, the hidden key in a piano key, all very creative. The set starting to fill with blood. Man, I swear these writers somehow watch Stranger Things before filming. Watching the mind entrance blink out with everyone still inside was probably the best we can hope for in a cliffhanger on this show. Presumably, Gordy will make it so everyone can escape. While a far better episode, I'm glad we're almost finished. I have zero predictions for the end. Throw Gideon and all the keys into the small portal?
Maybe. Yeah, the blood coming down the walls. It was interesting that Kinsey reached out and touched it. I felt like that was a very horror movie girl thing to do. Mm-hmm. And just had blood on her hand.
Well, is that blood? Yeah, definitely is.
Yeah, ick. It was a cool effect, though, coming down the walls and then even down the ropes. Really cool effect. Thanks, Lindsay. Appreciate that. All right. We did get a voice message this week from our friend Steve. Let's see what he has to say.
Hello, Strange Indeed. This is Steve, and this is for Curtain, the penultimate episode of Lock and Key, Season 3. Oh, Rindle from 1995. Whoa, did they just conjure a demon with this key? Oh, young Gordy. Very foreshadowing. One of these days I'm going to matter to you. I can't believe they're just going to let this guy forgive him for... He killed your dad. Seems like kind of a violation that his first introduction to the keys is taking him into his own head. Why wouldn't they take him into one of their heads? Oh, that's right. They can take away memories. I forgot about that. Creepy with the two bodies on the floor, almost holding hands, touching. Goggles, safety first before you cut into the chest. Bodhi's so great when she lights it on fire. Yes! Definitely a bad mom. Wait a minute. It's what? How is it using magic to protect itself? What? So now we know where the title of the episode comes from, all these curtains they have to walk through to get into Gordy's head. Oh, clever. So she trapped him in there with all the bad stuff in Gordy's head. It's a good plan, putting the... Oh, but it's come back to the house. Did the writers say, you know, F it, we'll just make up our own rules for these keys in the box? Oh, Gordy is dying. What happens if he dies while they're in his head? Now they gotta find the way out. Well, there's not much time left in this episode. I hope they're not stuck in his head. Uh-oh. And we're seeing how his parents treated him when he... Oh, goodness, this is so sad. So Gideon got out of the basement. Now he's playing the piano, and he's somehow controlling this world? Got the key. He's tied up. Now run. Don't just stand there looking at him. Wasn't there something about dropping a piano on somebody? Didn't Dodge, when she was a little kid, say that? So which body has the key in its head? The one still at the house, right? The one not in the ambulance. And of course, that's where it ends. Next week, the finale.
That was a good one, Steve.
Yeah.
Really good. Very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no answers. Thanks, everyone, so much for your feedback. Hope to hear more from you guys for the finale, series finale of Lock and Key.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe we're here already.
Yeah, I guess the one silver lining of the show not being as good this season is it's not as hard to take that it's over. But I'm still, you know, I have a soft spot for the show for sure.
Totally.
Yep.
All right. Well, that moves us into comic talk. If you don't want to hear any spoilers about the comic or hear anything about the comic at all, then please skip ahead. Skip ahead to Great British Bake Off if you need a little lift me up. But so any thoughts about this episode and the comics?
Not a lot to skip over for people who don't want to listen to. Because all of this, I mean, with Gideon and Gordy and the creation key or drawing key, all of that is new to the show as far
creation
as,
you know. Creation key's not in the comics.
I don't know if it was. I don't think so because I don't remember it. I
can't remember that either.
So really the only thing I can think of, which I'm just pulling out of my head right now, is like, do I have anything? And I was like, okay, this the Tempest. Mm-hmm. Production and performance. I'll mention that just because it played a pretty big part in a lot of the flashbacks of, because we got a whole lot more about the Keepers flashbacks, like almost a whole book of it in the comics, like a whole volume. They definitely, you know, a big part of that was them pulling off this incredible Tempest performance that nobody could quite figure out how they did it. Because they did. They used, like, all of the keys to their advantage, seeing they had, like, the Crown of Shadows that, like, Lucas was using to, like, so, like, the demons and Caliban and the monsters in the play were, like, all the shadow monsters. I think, like, Kim had, like, the angel wings on that she was flying around. Like, so there's just a lot of, like, they would show just a lot of that. And there's a lot of references to it a lot. And I think, you know, the big thing that happened with Lucas becoming Dodge and all of that, I think happened like right after their performance because they were like down in the cage so, celebrating after the play, and then that's when everything
happened. If that happened like that here, which maybe we will see something like that next week, now that you mention it, you know, the aftermath of the play, then it would make more sense why, you know, like Rendell wouldn't be asking about the creation key after that so much, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that's really the only things from comics I could think of was seeing some of this behind the scenes of them getting ready for the Tempest and using the keys for it. And because it does play a pretty big part in the comics, and we see what they do with it.
That makes sense. I know I didn't get that far. Whenever I was reading the comics, I stopped before I got to that flashback book volume. But I remember before that, they alluded to that production of the Tempest often. Like, that was very important. That was an important event for all of them. I didn't realize at that time, I guess it came out in that volume, that why it was such a big deal. And it's because they used the keys, so that makes sense. But why it was like such a monumental event with them, why it was such a big deal, they kept referring to it, kept, you know, talking about or seeing pictures of it. And so that makes sense. I wonder if we will get that. So
it was kind of the last time the Keepers really were all together enjoying what they had before everything went to hell, literally. Right.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they do incorporate any of that in the finale, or if this was their way of showing some of that, you know, without going all in to it. I haven't looked to see how long next week's episode is. I don't want to like look at anything or even see the description, so I don't know how long the episode is. I hope they give a little bit of a longer episode.
The time
is it?
It's a little bit longer than these. Not a lot. It's like 40 minutes.
That's not so much. It's still not, that's not much for a series. I mean, I know that they didn't know that, or I assume that they didn't know that, but. You know, I don't know. It's still a finale episode, whether it's a season or a series. Yeah. I would have expected at least nearly an hour. We used to get nearly 47 minutes to nearly an hour in the first couple seasons. Yeah. So it would have been nice to have the time to explore that. Well, I guess we'll find out. Mm-hmm. Any other comic thoughts from anyone?
That's it. I've got.
All right. Well, that's then going to move us along into our hot takes on Great British Bake Off. So,
fresh out of the oven, hot takes.
No claggy sponges here. So,
no soggy bottoms either.
No
please.
Soggy bottoms. This new collection that came out is Collection 10, and this was Episode 1 that premiered. This last Friday, we'll be moving into episode 2 that we'll be ready to hopefully talk about. I'm hoping that we'll get a chance to kind of come back. I know we're wrapping up Lock and Key, but it'd be nice to be able to get an opportunity to at least, if not every episode, every other episode or something like that, and just do a quick hot take. But anyway, if you don't want to listen to our quick hot takes and quick conversation about Great British Bake Off, then you should skip ahead. But we'd love it if you stick around because it's a lot of fun. Okay, so I just threw a couple things on the agenda as far as, you know, if you want to mention what your favorite bake was, if you had a favorite moment, favorite baker, stand-up baker, who wants to go first?
I'll just say that I thought, you know, last season it took, and in previous seasons, it takes me a while to warm up to the contestants. They, you know, they're always likable, but it just takes me a while to care as much. And this episode, I thought they were all great.
Yeah.
Lots of personality. I kind of love them all right away. And it's interesting to look and go, well, by the end of this, we're going to know who the geniuses are. You can kind of tell already who some of the super talented ones are. But I was sad to see this guy. What was it? Mike, or I forgot his name.
Will.
He was one of the ones I was like, oh, I like this guy. And then he left. So anyway, there's plenty of other every single one, even the one that got kind of upset and I just need to be by myself. I could totally understand getting stressed out. And I was glad that she kind of pulled it out in the end. I don't know. For standouts, I kind of liked Sandro, you know, that guy, Dawn, the older woman. I thought she was really funny and could keep up in there with Noel. Most people, he shoots out a couple jokes, and by that time, they just don't know what the hell to say. But she kept in there. And then Carol with the pink and purple hair, she's such a great baker. And so those were the three that stood out to me.
It's awesome. Mm-hmm. Pink, what about you?
Yeah, I tried to keep short on things. I was like, I have like 10 notes, and that's way too many.
So no, pick your favorite.
But if I just run through quick. Yeah, I think definitely my favorite. Sandro is a beautiful human being. Mm-hmm. Just like, I think he's my favorite. Just like watching, I was like, yeah, that guy is really cool. But then others, yeah, Carol, you mentioned with the you know, I just looked at it, I was like, there's Penny from the future. That's our.
Yeah, I thought about that too. Yeah. Penny from Podcastica. Yeah.
I loved her line. Who doesn't like coffee and walnut? Unless you don't like coffee and are allergic to nuts. Yep, she's great. And then Janusz, I predicted Starbaker and Elimination before they happened. I kind of figured the way that it would go. Mm. And he got Star Caker of the Bake Week.
Oh my gosh,
so that
wasn't that
him.
Adorable, Star Caker of Bake Week? I love that.
but yeah, so those are kind of my favorites there. And then Pooh Baca will forever live in
my
head.
So funny. Think it's so that creative. Was the best part of that.
She did that really well. That is not easy to do. I think we've all tried a Chewbacca, you know, at one point or another.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Hilarious.
I like how they do the themes before all the shows, and that one was fun. Anything else you wanted to add there, Paik?
That's about okay. It. Keep it short.
I know. Hot takes, right?
Short and positive.
Short and positive.
There we go.
Well, I, like y'all, I loved all the bakers. I thought, yeah, sometimes it takes me just an episode or two, but I really related to a lot of them. I thought it was a great group. They do a great job of getting really great personalities, distinctive personalities, but you love all of them. I really liked Janusz, even before he won. I was like, I don't know something about that guy. He's, you know, I like him. He's got a very sweet personality. He just seems like a very, very sweet person. And I thought he was just absolutely adorable. And then, of course, his line there at the end when he called his partner and said he won Star Caker the Bake Week. I'm like, oh, that's it. You know, I'm going to be watching you. I really liked Rebs, though. She's the one, young girl from Ireland. I was really rooting for her, really, really. I was like, oh, I just give her a chance. She's making some mistakes, but please give her a chance. I really wanted her to pull through, and she did. Mm-hmm. Thought she was great. I thought Shabira was really great, though, too. And,
yeah, especially with that freaking red velvet cake.
That was my favorite
bake.
That was
so masterful. Paul's like, this is it.
Yep.
And she's like,
this is what we wanted. The height on that red velvet cake was beautiful. And I love red velvet cake.
I wanted to eat it. That's my favorite bake, too, just to get it out of the way.
Mine, too.
Her red velvet cake.
You guys can have it. That's, yeah.
Don't like red velvet?
No, it's like literally, yeah, I said red velvet's easily my least favorite cake.
Oh, no. Well, there were a lot of good things to love from the signature to the technical, and then.
Carol had her home cake. I kind of missed it, and I'm not watching these twice, or, you know, because we're trying to do it quick, but. She had some cake with coffee and it burned or something. It burned his mouth or something, but they still liked it anyway. Or did I misinterpret that?
Yeah, he was just saying the coffee was like really strong.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind trying that. I like hot things and coffee things.
Yeah, thought that was interesting. Yeah, I was definitely falling for the red velvet cake. I would have eaten all of them regardless because I loved them. Love red velvet cake. And then, yeah, poor Will, first one to go. That was a bit of a bummer, but great things. I'm excited. Like we were just kind of chatting about there in the beginning was, it's just, the show's such a mood lifter for me. I was, have been super tired and in a not great mood today. And then as soon as that came on, I was just like, you know, immediate smile on my face. And so I love this show. Love all of them. Did you notice at the end they did a little like placard there at the end for a woman named Chloe Avery. So I looked her up just for everyone's awareness. That was sad. Apparently, Chloe Avery was a longtime culinary producer for Love Productions, and that's the production company behind the Great British Bake Off. She passed away on August 22nd of this year from cancer. Hashtag cancer sucks. But she was a vital part of the success of Great British Bake Off. As I mentioned, she was a culinary producer, but she also worked in the same role of some of the show's spinoffs, like Great American Baking Show. And her role as culinary producer was to, she determined the signature and showstopper challenges for each episode.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and she had to make sure that each baker had the ingredients and supplies needed for their bakes. Chloe's attention to detail and desire to see the bakers succeed unlikely went unnoticed by viewers, but rest assured, Great British Baking Show wouldn't have been the phenomenon that it was without her magical touch. So that was a nice little dedication they had for her. Thought it was worth mentioning. And really sad for her family.
So. Yeah. So I'm going to do, I had a few other random notes, so I'll do it just like we do our notes. So Sue and Mel were the hosts for seven. This is actually the 13th season in American parlance. They call it series in the UK. Sue and Mel were the hosts for the first seven. They were great if you never saw those. But Noah Fielding's the best. And this is his sixth. So they did seven. He did six. I'm always afraid he's going to leave. Maybe he'll do one more and be like, okay, I match them. Matt lost weight.
Yeah, he did.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He looks good.
The Dawn, the older woman, they showed her home and she had these sugar figurines. Those were incredible that she let her granddaughter play with. Looked like a frog or something. Mm-hmm. That was really cool. Mm-hmm. I loved when Paul shook his own hand over his blueberry muffins.
Well done.
And I loved when Maxie was all, oh, you, I was so scared to come up here. And then she walked away and he goes, boo. That was hilarious. That's all.
Paul Hollywood. Nice. He never disappoints. That was great. Great to talk about the show again. I'm so happy it's back on. Like I said, it's a great mood lifter.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Next week on the podcast, we'll be covering season 3, episode 8, the Lock and Key series finale entitled Farewell.
Aww. Bit of a bummer seeing it in black and white like that, for better or worse. Right. Kind of sad.
Right here. It happens.
Yep, sad to see it go.
Yeah, I'm always sad when a show I cover is over. Put so much time and energy into it and then it's just gone.
Yeah.
It's like a breakup.
Okay. Watch it tonight with a pint of ice cream in celebration of end of an era.
Nice idea.
There you go. Good idea. Well, we are excited for you to follow us into Key House, but until then, you can follow us on Twitter at StrangeTCast.
You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/StrangerTCast.
You can email us at StrangerThingsCastPod@gmail.com, and you can also find us on the TV Time app.
You can find Strange Indeed and a bunch of other great podcasts at Podcastica.com.
What's going on at Podcastica right now?
Well, Andor just came out today, the Star Wars show, and I watched the first 15 or 20 minutes, and it is good.
Really?
I watched the first episode. So they dropped three episodes. So,
and it's very gritty, and you know, one thing I loved about Rogue One, the movie, was how it brought this gritty element to Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars was already gritty for its time for sci-fi, but even more so, and it's very mature and seems well-written, and you know, it's a contrast to like The Mandalorian, which is also great, but feels more like a kid's adventure. And this just feels more adult and it's seedy underbelly kind of thing. And man, I'm loving it. I mean, it's only 20 minutes, so I don't know, but you saw the whole first episode.
I watched the whole first episode and yeah, I would highly agree with that. I'm excited to watch the other two. Because I think, Jonathan and James are covering all three together in their first episode.
That's right. So. Yeah, and I think they're going to be recording tomorrow. So get your comments in quick on that one. Mm-hmm. Facebook.com/Podcastica.
Yeah, but I'm excited to see what happens with this show. And already knowing it's like 12 episodes here, and then they already have a season 2 planned, I think. Yeah. So.
And I think I read they want to do 5. And it, you know, of course, leads up to Rogue One. So if you saw that, you know what happens. That's all I'm going to say. But it's a prequel to Rogue One.
Rogue One was one of my favorites, like standalone. And it's got a special place in my heart. I thought it was absolutely fabulous. So I was excited for the series. Now, I didn't watch any trailers, though. So I would be going in completely just green to the whole thing, but I keep hearing fantastic things. And then to hear you guys, talk about how much you love it so far, that makes me really want to dig in. I hope I can find some freaking time to watch
it. I know.
They're shorter episodes. They? Like they're not super
45 minutes. Long. Okay. Yeah. And Jonathan, Buchalil, he's Australian. If you've ever heard him on any of our podcasts, he has this deep voice that's, and with the Australian accent, I mean, it doesn't even matter what he's talking about. You'll enjoy listening to him, but he's also a huge Star Wars fan, and his buddy James is on with him, and I think he works on the Star Trek shows or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I heard that.
But anyway, they're a pleasure to listen to. And I wasn't going to be able to cover this show, even though we covered Boba Fett and Mandalorian and Obi-Wan Kenobi, because we have too many other things going on. So when Jonathan stepped up and wanted to do it, I was like, yes, perfect. And so now that it's such a great show, I'm going to kick him off and no, I'm just kidding.
Okay. I'm excited. You're definitely going to try to squeeze yourself into an episode or two.
Well, he asked me to come on for some, so I'll definitely go on for some. Yeah.
Well, that is exciting. A lot of new content coming out of podcasts. It is a busy, busy time for all of us at Podcastica right now. So no shortage of great content being published, that's for sure. And speaking of great content and great podcasts, Paik, what do you and Daphne have going on at Run for Your Lives this week?
Yeah, we are nearing another season finale of our own. And so the last movie that we do of each season, because we kind of wrap it up with a, you know, look back special that we'll do next week, and we've got a special 100th episode coming up after
that. So exciting. So
that'll be fun. But yeah, but this this is our last movie of the season, and we always end it on a Tremors movie. So we have worked our way up to Tremors 5, Bloodlines. It's the introduction of Jamie Kennedy into the Tremors franchise in that universe. It's just, God, they're my guilty pleasure movies, to the fact that it's not even guilty. I just love them.
I don't blame guilty pleasures. Just ridiculous, love what you love.
I love them. Yeah.
That's okay.
So it's always fun to go in and watch these. So yeah, Tremors 5, we've worked our way to. So that'll be out on Friday. And then,
awesome.
Then the next week, look back special. And then the Monday after that, we've got a special 100th episode that I'll talk about more later.
Oh, awesome. How fun. That is so cool. You guys are almost at 100 already.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
All right, that is our show. Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
Until next time, I'm Rima.
I'm Jason.
I'm Paik.
And Adrian Triffitt is strange indeed.